You're listening to another episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns.
That's right, everybody. It is another wrestling episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns. As always, it's your guy, Bully Rye, and I have a super, super special guest with me today. Please welcome to the show the host of the two-time South Carolina Broadcasters Association's Best Sports Show of the Year, of the Rob Brown Show, where you can listen to him from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. weekdays on the Fan Upstate, 97.1 FM Greenville, 97.7 FM Spartanburg, and also on the free Odyssey app. Please welcome to the show, for the first time ever, Mr. Rob Brown. Rob, what's going on, bud? How's everything?
As the legendary R-Truth, friend of the show, once said, what's up, man? I'm glad to be here, bud. Thanks for letting me come by and talk some wrestling.
This is the most exciting wrestling show I've ever done, primarily because you're here, but also because we are just coming off of the biggest and best WrestleMania of all time in WrestleMania 40. And you talked about it a lot on your show last week, and I wanted to bring you on the show to talk about it on mine because so much happened, and there's so much to get into. Before we get into, like, how if you had to give it a scale of 1 to 10, where would you rate this this rendition of WrestleMania?
I mean, I gotta say it's an 8, 8.5, 9, somewhere in that range. I think that anytime they do one of the milestones, 10, 20, 30, 40, they've all been great, right? 1, 10, 20, 30, 40, I would argue are some of the best. And there's the 17s and the 19s that are also iconic. But I think just because of the culmination of the story with Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, I think having that main event as bananas as the last 10 minutes of it were, You had a good mix. Like, wrestling is at its best when you got a little bit of everything. A little drama, a little comedy, a couple of moments that you're not really sure if they're shoot or if they're kayfabe, and you got that with McIntyre and Punk. You got a cash-in, which didn't surprise me because I'm a big, smart boy and I knew what was coming, but it surprised most everybody, and that was a blast. Like, I think you got a little bit of everything, and the show stayed pretty true to what makes wrestling great. I think the Paul Levesque era is off to a phenomenal, phenomenal start.
I couldn't agree with you more. So let's go ahead and hop into WrestleMania XL Night 1, where we saw the show start off with the Women's World Championship on the line as Rhea Ripley takes on and defeats Becky Lynch. I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves to get into Night 2, But I did want to talk about this match primarily because it's I think the fact that Becky Lynch lost and what would happen on Night 2, I think that we've seen the last of Becky Lynch for quite some time. Tell me what you thought about this match, and then we can get into what the future holds for one Becky Lynch.
I thought it was one of the more interesting matches because it was one of the few that I kind of was 50-50 on who was going to win. I mean, I thought there was a justifiable reason to give Becky the strap back and give her another run. But the reality here is they know what they have in Rhea Ripley. She is a bona fide, certified, genuine A-lister in the world of wrestler, on top of being an absolute smoke show and entertaining as hell. She is, and I mean this, the most total package that they have had since Charlotte Flair. And honestly, I like her more than Charlotte Flair, TBH, as the kids say. I thought the match was fine. I thought it was kind of going to be what it was going to be. Whether it's true or not, I don't have any reason to think it's not. I'm glad that they kind of hung Becky Lynch with, she's been dealing with an illness. She's a little under the weather. She's fighting a fever. She's got strep, whatever the case might be. Again, I don't know if that's shoot or kayfabe, but I think it allowed you to put Rhea over, to continue the Rhea Ripley era without kicking the legs out from Becky Lynch. Like, it made it seem like there was a chink in the armor that Rhea could take advantage of. So I think that was a good way to handle that. I agree. I think we get a little bit of a break from Becky, and I think it makes sense with her and Seth having the opportunity to go away together for a little while, look after their kid, do real adult things. I thought it was a good way to give her some time away from Scream. I thought the match was fine. I thought it was good. I thought they put in good work. I thought they let Becky have control of the match enough that it was, it wasn't necessarily 50-50, but for a few minutes there, you thought maybe there was a little doubt. I thought overall it was pretty good.
Yeah, listen, I wasn't a huge fan of Rhea Ripley as she came over from NXT to the main roster. I thought that she needed some work in the ring. I thought she was fine on the mic. I thought she had the right look, the right attitude. But obviously, when you saw her come over to the Judgment Day, there was that added attitude, that added persona that maybe she was kind of missing on the main roster. And so she's just grown stronger and stronger. And after she won the title at last WrestleMania, I'm not sure if you would have been able to really think or really put into thought how long she would hold this championship. Like there's going to be a bunch of people in line for this title. And with that being said, now that we can get it out of the way that Becky Lynch is going to be gone for a while, we saw last night on Monday Night Raw where she was attacked by one Liv Morgan continuously on her Liv Morgan revenge tour. Who is the next person to truly challenge Rhea Ripley for this championship, and how long can they take this reign?
I almost think you kind of have to answer that it's Liv Morgan at this point. Liv was a fan favorite for a little while. She had I don't know if you remember this or if you were there, she had a massive gaffe when she was here in Greenville as the champ one time, and I think that kind of cooled WWE off on her. I think she's taken the time to go develop, to get a little bit better, and I would not be shocked to see her get another opportunity to make a run. I like Liv. I don't think Liv's in the stratosphere of Rhea Ripley right now. I honestly think Rhea Ripley could have a Roman Reigns-esque run as the women's division champion. I think that you have given, I think you've given Bayley her belt on the other side, so I think she's settled for right now. Really, the only name that I think you would look at and go, that's a legitimate, believable contender, is probably Jade Cargill right now. She's got the look. She's got the physique. The problem with Jade is very similar to what it was when she was with AEW, which is she's a great talker. She's got an incredible look. I still think she's got a lot of in-ring work that she needs to clean up before we're really ready to put her there. So I would not be shocked to see a very long program with Jade Cargill working along with Bianca Belair to kind of sharpen her up and put her in that area. And once she gets to that spot, 100% Jade Cargill is likely the next in line for Rhea Ripley.
Yeah, listen, last year they talked about like what dream matches that we wanted to see with one Rhea Ripley. And the name Bianca Belair came up. And I think a lot of people expected it last year's WrestleMania at 39. For Rhea to go and take on Jade Cargill as one of those like powerhouse versus powerhouse women's championships. But to your point, like Jade Cargill coming onto the scene, she's got some in-ring work still to do. She got a squash victory last night. We'll talk about that here in a minute when we get to their tag team match. But she got a squash win last night on Monday Night Raw. Yeah, I still think with the brand draft coming up in a couple of weeks, I would still love to see Rhea Ripley get her match with Bianca Belair. I think that they would be tremendous together in the ring. If it wasn't Jade Cargill to dethrone her, I would love to see it be Bianca Belair. And then maybe Jade could go and win the SmackDown title or the WWE women's title, I should say, from Bayley. Let's move on in the card here. The next matchup on this card was surprising to me was your six pack ladder match for the tag team championships. I love that you and Lonzo talked about this on your show, that you had Miz and Truth winning the tag titles. There was an Easter egg that was dropped on Monday Night Raw a week ago yesterday, that the idea that you had to grab both titles from high above the ring in order for the match to be over with. So it was sort of understood that they were finally going to split the tag team titles at WrestleMania, and they did, with A-Town Down Under taking the SmackDown tag team titles and the Awesome Truth winning the Raw tag titles. Rob, do you think this was the right time and the right way to separate these tag titles?
I do, as long as we're going to keep doing the two shows, two brands, two titles, both directions thing, that I think it was a solid time. I love Grayson Waller, just so we're clear before I go where I'm going with this. I love Grayson Waller. I think he is very solid. I think he has progressed immensely since he got brought up to the main roster. I'm not a huge fan of the Waller Experience talk show. I don't think he's quite got the chops like The Miz does, like Kevin Owens does, to handle that. But I think is an in-ring heel. He's done a good job. Austin Theory, I think, has everything he needs to be a star. I think he just needed a bit of a boost, and this gives it to him. So I actually don't have a huge problem with them taking their half of the belts like they did. And on top of that, if you're going to give it to R-Truth and Miz, by the way, R-Truth was on the Rob Brown Show a couple of weeks ago. I would like to point out once again that the Rob Brown Show bump is real, because we bumped Gunther, we bumped Chris Statlander, we bumped every wrestler that's come on to either have a reign or have an incredible reign with the belt that they already had. And now R-Truth gets added to that collection. R-Truth has had such a renaissance, such a revival. Putting the strap on him while he is white hot with the fans was absolutely the right decision. To do it in a way that he gets to go out there with Miz, who plays off of him so exceptionally well, is great. But in order to do that, you got to have the other straps on heels. And unfortunately, nobody else in that match outside of Judgment Day, which I think there's a reason, and I'm sure we'll get to it, that you took the belts off of Judgment Day. You got to put them on heels on the other side, and Waller and Theory were it. I think it's a great opportunity for a brass ring moment for A-Town Down Under. I also think it's a great opportunity because, again, wrestling needs comedy, wrestling needs funny. But much like you can get people to invest by being an absolute chicken, you know what, heel with Dom, we invest in characters that we love their comedy. R-Truth is one of them, and now you build up the other side. So I think it's a fantastic way to handle it. And listen, I know I'm sitting here going, oh, this is good, this is good, this is good. I'll be critical when it's time. There's some spots on the card I'm gonna be a jerk about. You will never, ever find me bad talking my legend Ron R-Truth Killings.
I love it. Real quick, shout out to Joseph Priestley, who's in the chat. This serves as a reminder, if you're just joining us, we're here with Rob Brown of the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate, talking WrestleMania 40. If whether you're listening on Facebook, YouTube, or X, leave a comment and join the conversation with us. Listen, this was the right time for me to split the tag titles. We've been waiting for it for a while. Now all I need for them is to bring us some new belts. Get rid of the quarter-looking center plates. They were pennies prior to that. Give us some really good, authentic, nice-looking tag team title belts to go along with this new tag team title split. I love who they put the titles on. Now we just need to get new tag belts to go along with it. Next up on night one, we saw the LWO team featuring Rey Mysterio and Andrade, originally supposed to be Dragon Lee, taking on Santos Escobar and Dominic Mysterio. This match was about what I expected it to be. I did not see what happened to Dragon Lee as to why they pulled him from the card, and except for the fact that I know the SmackDown, they had him choose Andrade over Carlito, sort of laying the foundation for Carlito to once again turn heel. Rob, how do you like this match? I mean, do you think we're ever going to get one final payoff where either Rey and Dom reconcile, or do we think we're going to get one final payoff where they fight one last time and then Rey Mysterio rides off into the sunset?
I mean, listen, I think you're ultimately going to get, I think Rey, I could be wrong, La Familia is enormous to luchador wrestlers. I've got to assume that ultimately they are going to give him that moment with his son. I wouldn't be shocked to see him have maybe a tag run together before they call it, but obviously you got to play through this whole story. I thought the match was fine. You had your Jason Kelce moment there at the end, which was a nice little Easter egg for the folks in Philly, because Jason Kelce, I'm ready to say it publicly, Jason Kelce is the better Kelce brother. All right? Fat hands down. I know Travis has got Tay-Tay, and good on Travis for outkicking the coverage to go date the world's most famous woman. My man, I respect that. But Jason, a bearded fat American, much respect. I acknowledge you, my bearded fat tribal chief, Jason Kelce. He's the charisma. He's the heart and soul of the New Heights podcast. He's my guy. Very cool to let him have a WrestleMania moment. I don't know that this match was exhilarating as it could be. The only thing I'll say, and this is one of those spots that I will be critical. At some point, WWE has got to stop doing this thing. And this is where I'm going to make some people uncomfortable. Maybe you, big fella. We have got to stop doing this thing where we put all the black guys and black girls into a stable together and all the Latinos into a stable together, because it's just the same stuff over. Like, when Jade came out and they're like, hey, it's Naomi and Bianca, I'm like, of course he is, right? Like, of course it is. When you ended up, and I know you have two Latino factions right now, but then they automatically fight with each other. They don't want to go after the Judgment Day. They don't want to go get belts. Like, they just auto want to fight the other Latinos in the group. Yeah, like, okay, I guess we're doing this. I thought the match was fine. I also got to keep reminding myself that Rey Mysterio is almost or over 50 damn years old now, so he ain't going to be the same guy he was when I was a kid. There really wasn't anywhere else that you could put the Jason Kelsey connection there, and obviously with Jason having the luchador mask at the Super Bowl party, okay, fine, like, that's his thing right now. I get it. I thought the match was okay. You kind of needed it to continue that story post-WrestleMania. Of night one, this and probably the next match we're going to talk about were kind of like they weren't bad. They weren't what they could have been, in my opinion.
Yeah, Shannon Smith, one of my co-hosts on the Cat Cave over on the Keep Pounding Podcast Network, says that you got a point as far as putting all the people that look alike in groups together. I mean, I don't know how they fix it. I mean, when you have the original Nation of Domination, it was Farouk, Savio Vega, and Crush, and then it turned into what it would become. So, yeah, I don't know how they fix it, but I think you make a great point. I do want to ask, did you know it was Jason Kelsey when they hopped over the barricade? Because I knew immediately.
First off, it's Jason Kelsey. Like, the dude comes across the barricade, it's like, oh, that's Jason Kelsey. It's very obvious. But then, like I said, you think about the fact that Kelsey... Everybody found out about Kelsey being a wrestling fan because of the luchador mask at the Super Bowl after party. Yeah. And then it's an Eagles luchador mask. It's like, who the hell is that gigantic ass man wearing UGG boots and a luchador mask jumping over the ring? Who's it going to be? I knew it was immediately. That doesn't mean everybody else did. And just because something doesn't catch us as big wrestling guys by surprise doesn't mean it's not an incredible moment for everybody else. Every time you do one of these WrestleManias in a city, you gotta have a city fandom moment for them to revel in. I'm just glad it was Jason Kelsey as opposed to like Joel Embiid, who obviously would have gotten hurt going into the ring.
No kidding. Joseph Priestley wants to make a point. At least these guys aren't riding for the ring on lawnmowers anymore. It could be. Listen, you talk about a new era. If it was somebody else is in charge, we never know what they could have done with this team.
I will say, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I will say this, that while I am going to stand on, I hope that eventually it gets away from all the black wrestlers are a stable, all the Latino wrestlers are a stable. I do hope we get away from that. At the same time, the one thing I will say, because you got the Hurt Business too. We got to include the Hurt Business in this car, or with what are they now? Whatever they're called now,
the Pride.
We got to include them here. At least in the process, they're letting them still be individual characters. Like, I got real worried when the Street Profits joined Bobby Lashley that they were gonna morph into this business. The Street Profits are fun, dog. Like, every time they come to the ring, I've seen them in person 3 times. My man, I now bring red Solo cups to the show to twirl like Montez, because that's my dog. At least they're allowing these characters to still be these unique, interesting characters, and not just like, hey, these 3 black guys wrestle together, so they all dress the same. Like, at least the Street Profits get to be the Street Profits, and B-Fab gets to be B-Fab, and Bobby Lashley gets to be Bobby Lashley. I just hope we kind of get away from that trope at some point.
I'm right there with you. Now, the next matchup on the card was the match that I was looking forward to the most. If you're just joining us again, we're here with Rob Brown of the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate, talking WrestleMania 40. Jimmy versus Jay, Uso versus Uso, brother versus brother. I really had high hopes for this match. I thought of the 2 nights that this match could be the one to steal the show, And I don't want to say that I was disappointed, because as you said about the LWO versus Escobar and Dominic, this is a fine match. It left me wanting more. Rob, what say you about the showdown we finally get? The third brother versus brother match here at WrestleMania 40.
So I'm first off, I'm going to agree with all that. In fact, I'll go one step further. I was disappointed a little bit. Now, the question mark is it my fault I was disappointed, or was it the Usos' fault that I was disappointed? And here's why. We've heard the interviews from Jimmy and Jay for years that their dream was to square off with each other at WrestleMania. That's been the goal the whole time. They've always wanted that match, and they got that match, and they got that match in a story that mostly made sense for them to face each other at WrestleMania, right? Like, there's still some questions about why it is that Jimmy fell under Roman's spell again. Like, I was all in on the story when Jimmy cost Jay the title shot, that he was doing it as a way to separate Jay from Roman, and he was biting the bullet so Jay could go do better. But then why didn't he leave once Jay moved over on a different show, right? Why didn't he go as he could have left and been like, no, I'm out, I don't acknowledge anymore. So there were elements. I love the Bloodline story from beginning until this past Sunday. I was all in on the Bloodline story. That's the one thing that, like, it didn't really click to me why Jimmy was making the decisions he was making. But when we spent this long waiting for Uso v. Uso, and when they told me it's our dream, it's our dream, it's our dream, it turned into, with all due respect, and as an AEW guy, it turned into a Young Bucks super kick spot fest, right? Like, it was just you, as soon as one guy stood, you're like, super kick, bow, super. It was like playing my little nephew in a wrestling game. Once he figures out that B kicks, he just B, 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 and he spams.
Yes.
He just spams the kick button. Like, that's what this match turned into. And it could have been so much more. When Jimmy and Jay squared off on the ring ramp during the main event on Sunday, that was better than the match they put on, which is too bad. I grew up in Pensacola, Florida, which is where Jimmy and Jay and Roman and that whole group grew up and learned their wrestling. I grew up fans of the Usos. I was a Uso fan when they were doing the haka in the face paint on opposite sides of the face. I am a huge Uso guy. So I don't know if that match was a letdown because Jimmy and Jay underperformed in what was supposed to be their... You think if it was their dream match, they would have put on the match of a lifetime, and this is something they would have been rehearsing for months and months and months. Or if it was a good match, but my hopes and expectations were so high that they were going to put on an all-timer that I worked myself into a shoot, brother, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we set ourselves up for more than what we got. Like, we had unrealistic expectations because we wanted this to be the greatest wrestling match we've ever seen. And we just didn't quite get it. Maybe we get it again. We don't know. There are rumors that there are new members of the Bloodline coming. And so we don't know where this storyline goes from here. But a quick fun fact, I actually got to meet the Usos at your radio station years ago. When I first moved to the Upstate, they came in to do a radio show with the Rise guys. And I won a radio contest and got to meet them. Super nice guys. And I've been a fan of them ever since.
I will one-up you. I have taken a frog splash from both Usos at the same time back in their... Back in their pre-WWE days when they were wrestling indie stuff around Pensacola, I was working for a radio station. They were doing a show down there. I went to cover it, and they asked if I wanted to take a bump. And I was like, yeah, obviously, I'm an idiot and a wrestling fan. I don't want anything else more on planet Earth than to take a bump. So Jimmy went to one, Jay went to the other. I laid in the middle of the ring. They hit me with the double Uso splash, and that was awesome. It was awesome. It hurt like hell, and it was awesome.
I want to be like Rob Brown when I grow up. Seriously, that's awesome.
No, strive to be better, okay? Do a favor to yourself and strive to be better, pal.
I don't know. Two-time World Award winner. I don't know if it gets much better than that, except for maybe three-time award winner. We'll see what happens in 2024. Let's go to the next match on the card. We talked about them already. We get the team of Bianca, Naomi, and Jade going over on Damage Control. You mentioned it on your show. I mentioned it on this show. It was foregone conclusion that Jade Cargill was going to go over in her first match. Again, it was a fine match, but nothing to write home about. Would you say the same?
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. It was kind of what I expected, which I think was a match designed to get Jade Cargill in on the WrestleMania stage. It was a match designed to give an opportunity for her to get out there on the biggest stage and kind of put something together. You have to have Bianca Belair on WrestleMania, whatever capacity. She's got to be there. This was a way to get her on there. And then because Damage Control had three, with all due respect to Naomi, Naomi just happened to get the benefit of being in a program with those two. The match was fine. It came and went exactly as I expected it to. I am a huge proponent, fan, ally, supporter of women's wrestling. And one of the things that drives me nuts is when you have hype and build to matches like Rhea Ripley, Becky Lynch, and then they get the payoff. And then, and not that there weren't kind of whatever we need a match here matches for the men on these cards, but like this is one of what we end up with four total women's matches across two nights, and this was one, and it was like it kind of felt almost thrown together as opposed to having a good program built around it. So little disappointed, but again, the match, what they didn't underperform, and for some of these matches that's about as good as you could ask for.
Yeah, listen, when I first found out that Jade Cargill was coming to WWE, I wanted to see, and this is before Damage Control won the tag titles, because that women's tag title has this cloud over its head. And for whatever reason, whoever the tag champions are tend to not hold them long. Someone tends to get hurt. But we see Damage Control holding on to the titles here. When Cargill announced she was coming to WWE, I wanted her and Bianca to take a run at the tag titles, and then to see Jade turn on Bianca like we saw with Shayna and Ronda Rousey. A little premature, in my opinion, but if you wanted to get her out of WWE, that's what they did. But that's how I want to see. I want to see this bond build with Bianca and Jade, because Bianca in the ring will also sort of hide some of what Jade Cargill is still missing, while helping her learn the ropes and get to know people on the road and whatnot before you finally get that program with Bianca and Jade. That's what I'm hoping for. And we sort of saw the beginning of it here as they teamed together. Next up, this is honestly, ever since his interview on your show, he has been one of my favorite people, not just my favorite wrestlers, like the way that he presented himself on your show and the fact that you got such notoriety from him saying to everybody that he wanted to wrestle Brock Lesnar. Right then and there, I was like, I'm a fan of this guy. I will always be a fan of this guy. I can't help with the fact that the name that they gave him in Gunther when he first came to the main roster, but Walter defends the Intercontinental Championship against Sami Zayn. Sami's build was this whole like Rocky thing where he was doubting himself. He didn't know how he was going to be able to do it. You get him in a program where Chad Gable is training him and trying to get him ready. And Sami Zayn does the unthinkable and knocks off Gunther and wins the Intercontinental Championship, ending a 666-day run as the Intercontinental Champion. Rob, as a friend of your show, as Gunther is, how'd you feel about this match, and was it the right time to take the title off of Gunther?
I realized 2 weeks ago it was Rocky, right? It's Philadelphia. What else are we doing? It's Rocky. Sami Zayn was Rocky. Gunther was Ivan Drago or whatever bad guy you want to pick. Chad Gable was Mick, right? Like, they even brought Sami's wife for the Adrian, I did it moment. They got to share. It literally was the Rocky movie. And I'm mad at myself because on the show, Lonzo and I did our prediction. I got every match on the card right except this one. Not only every single match, I got the cash-in correct. I got the run-ins correct. I got everything right because, again, big smart boy. And the only reason I picked Gunther is because of him being a friend of the show. Okay. Well, that's not true. There's one more reason, which is WWE's about to go on a European tour. They're going to end up in Germany right next to his home country of Austria. I assume they would want him to walk in as a champ. I think this is maybe an opportunity for them to give him like a mini face turn before they take him over there. So when he goes home, he is a baby face to that crowd. And this is the direction they go. It also sets you up with a Sami Zayn, Chad Gable feud, which I'm all in for the set, mm-hmm. for the record. I was willing to sacrifice one loss on the card to pick friend of the show, Gunther. Let me tell you guys this real quick, backside information. nicest wrestler I have ever met. And that's not a short list, okay? I've met some incredibly nice guys. When he opened the door, first off, pardon my French, he a big-ass boy, as Gardner Minshew would say, all right? He a big fella. He opened the door. He reached out to shake my hand before I could shake his. He introduced himself to me before I could introduce myself to him. Anytime that you have a wrestler come on, the company, whether it's AEW or WWE, whoever, they give you just a quick little rundown of like, okay, these are the things you can talk about. Please don't mention these things, right? Like they asked us not to, when we had R-Truth on, they asked us not to mention him being a previous TNA champion and the first black champion of that company. They're like, we know it's big, but we want to focus on WWE. Whatever. That's all well and good because they're doing it for promotion just like we are. When I had my conversation with Gunther, he was so obnoxiously polite that I almost didn't know how to handle the interview, right? Like, you will notice, you've listened to the show.
Of course.
Just about every wrestler that we've had on, whether it's R-Truth or Matt Hardy or who else? Darby Allin or any of these guys and gals, it's always mostly shoot, but like with some sprinkled kayfabe on top to promote the show that they're doing. He was the one guy that it was a 100% out of kayfabe interview because I couldn't even pretend to be in conflict with this guy. That's how incredible he was. He will forever be on Rob Brown's Mount Rushmore favorite wrestling dudes and interviews. He was spectacular. So I picked him for sentimental reasons. I think he is absolutely, as far as I'm concerned, and maybe this is recency bias, and maybe this is just because he was so kind when he came into the studio that day. As far as I'm concerned, he's the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time, and I will stay with that. Sorry, Honky Tonk Man. Take a back seat, son. We are all Walter/Gunther fans in this house.
Yeah, I would have told Honky Tonk to take a back seat a long time ago anyway. I'm right there with you. Gunther's the best Intercontinental Champion of all time. I think you mentioned going to Germany. I think he might have a shot to regain the Intercontinental Championship. But even more so than that, my thought process is that they needed, like, some people could argue that you didn't with Warrior Hogan. What was it, WrestleMania 7, whatever it was, where you could have the Intercontinental Champion contend for the world title. And I didn't think you needed that here. And getting the title off of Gunther will propel him into a program for the world championship somewhere down the line, whether he goes to SmackDown, whether he stays on Raw, whatever the case is. And that's what I'm here for. Because if there's one person on the roster that hasn't gotten that push at the main title that I think would benefit not only himself, but the company, I think it's Gunther. And so I am 100% all in on Gunther going forward. We have reached the main event of night one, the biggest main event in WrestleMania history. And that includes night two, in my opinion, where you got to see the Bloodline, the team of Roman Reigns and The Rock, taking on Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. The results of this match would set up Bloodline rules for night two, as the Bloodline would go over The Rock hitting a people's elbow on Cody Rhodes. And the seeds of doubt were set in as The Rock goes over here. But you said you picked all these matches on your show, and so you sort of predicted everything that was going to happen. Did that take away from what this match was, in your opinion?
When you go watch a James Bond movie, you go in roughly 100% sure that James Bond is going to win, correct? Like, that's how movies work. And yet, James Bond movies are freaking awesome. Doesn't matter the actor, doesn't matter the era. Every James Bond movie is awesome. Some are better than others, but they're all awesome. And yet, I enjoy them all, even knowing that James Bond's going to win every time. This is a fight that I have had with the great one Lonzo on the show many, 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 many times, because he's a guy that goes, well, if I know how it's going to end, it kind of takes... Nah, it doesn't. A wonderful story, even if predictable, is still a wonderful story as long as the story is wonderful, right? Like, that's how I've always felt about it. If the story is compelling, then the story is compelling, even if you know how it's going to end. I knew exactly how this match was going to end. There was never a doubt in my mind how was this match was going to end. You don't pimp the concept of Bloodline Rules for two damn months to then not have a Bloodline Rules match, right? Like, we all knew how it was going to go, and we knew how it was going to go in the way that it was how it was going to go, and it was still fun. I think you allowed Rock enough breathing room to still be good while not burdening him with trying to carry a full match for the first time in, what, a decade or whatever it's been. I think you did it in a way that Cody and Seth looked good in a loss for their next night, but also it made Seth vulnerable the next night, right? Mm-hmm. Like, all of a sudden you're in that match and you're thinking about Seth facing Drew to open the next night's show. Like, you're like, oh, good Lord, is he thinking, like, is it? And so it increased the stakes for Cody and Seth, not just for Cody's opportunity to win the main event the next night, but for Seth to maintain his belt. And at some point, like, I'll tell you the one thing that I kept thinking during this match was, everybody talked about Seth turning on Cody as a possibility. There was one point I thought about that in the match. There was one point where I went, does there come a point where Seth Rollins looks at Cody and goes, if I keep fighting, I'm going to lose tomorrow night and it's not worth it, and leave Cody out there alone for a handicap? And the fact that that was in there made it just unpredictable enough that even though I knew the outcome, I didn't know what path we were going to go to get there. And that's what made that match good to me. Again, I enjoyed it. Was it the greatest tag match of all time? Absolutely not. But this was never about the match. This was about the stakes for night number two, where all the cameras were going to be pointed. And I think they told a compelling story, even if the match wasn't amazing.
Yeah, my wrestling show, my football show co-host, Banker Bill, asked that question on Facebook a few days ago about, how do you feel about when you can predict the finish of a match? Does it take away? And he says, coming from a non-true wrestling fan, he thought you put it up perfectly. I kind of thought it was going to be the opposite. I thought we were going to get all the gaga and all the run-ins in this match instead of what we get in night two. But after it was all said and done, it all made sense. To your point, like, we knew how the story was going to end. We saw how it begun, but it was interesting to see how they put the story together to where we got from point A to point B. And that's what made this match. That's what made this match so great. And like you said, it's set up for night two absolutely perfectly. When you saw them attacking the previously injured knee of Seth Rollins, you absolutely knew what was coming. And so it was interesting to see what would come on night two, which we have actually reached WrestleMania 40 night two. And the match, the night starts off with none other than Seth Rollins defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Drew McIntyre. You get Drew McIntyre with the bagpipes coming in like he's coming in from Braveheart. And then you get Seth Rollins coming in like he's coming through Mardi Gras. And just the spectacle of WrestleMania in these two entrances was just absolutely phenomenal. But again, you talk about like how this match was going. We all knew, at least the somewhat informed wrestling fans kind of saw what was coming with McIntyre either winning the title and then losing immediately to Damian Priest, or Priest interjecting himself into this match because of all the times that Drew McIntyre thwarted the attempts of cashing in of Damian Priest. And that's exactly what we got. We get CM Punk, who, unbeknownst to you, Rob, we don't say his name on the show. I'm saying it just for this special occasion. We have a pseudonym that we call him Ahmed Beefcake because we don't like him on the show. But CM Punk, a commentary after the match, McIntyre, is holding the title in his face, kind of continuing to taunt him. And then we get to see the CM Punk attack him. And here comes Damian Priest. I know that we both knew what was coming here, Rob, but how did you feel about the match between Rollins and McIntyre? And how do you feel about Priest finally cashing in his Money in the Bank contract?
Again, this was one of the things that I saw coming. It was still entertain because it is, what's the old phrase? It's not the destination, it's the journey. That's a pretty good way to sum up how all this works. And that is honestly how I felt about it. Like, I feel like we all kind of knew the direction that this was going to go in. And I think what it does is it really gives you a great outcome for all four of the parties. First off, let's start with this. The whole premise of Drew's anger has been what? That no matter what he's done, he keeps getting outshined by other people. He wins a championship during COVID, but there's no fans. He comes back, gives it to Seth. Seth's this loud, over-the-top character. He gets all the love. Drew gets nothing. Drew's finally on his way back. Punk comes back. Punk gets to jump him in line. He gets hurt. All of this is great. And then Drew immediately loses the title. That's unhinged. I'll tell you what I loved from the onset. Out comes Drew with what, till that moment, in my opinion, had been the coolest entrance yet. Anytime you give me half a battalion from Braveheart with broadswords standing across and a full Scottish band playing pipes and drums, it was great. And then what does Seth do? Immediately outshines his entrance. Like, Drew can't even have the coolest entrance. Seth immediately comes out and takes that away from him, too.
Yeah.
It was, to me, if you watch wrestling from a deeper level, that, to me, was a very cool concept of how you're telling this story. That Drew can't even have the best entrance, forget of WrestleMania, in his own damn match. He had this great entrance, and then Seth immediately takes it away. Then they put on a good enough match. I mean, it's a good match. It's fine. It's exactly what I thought Seth and Drew was going to be. And then you have Punk get involved. So what do we have now? We have Damian with the belt, which I think if you're going to either break up Judgment Day or keep them around as a faction, either way, they needed some more weight added to them. That belt does that for Damian in the Judgment Day. It creates, not that we didn't already had kind of the thing brewing between McIntyre and Punk, but now the foundation for a program there is through the world. And by the way, I don't know if you felt the same way, but when McIntyre was getting up into Punk's face up on the table and all that, I can't be the only one that was like, I don't know if this is real or not, right? Which is where wrestling's at its best. It's at its best when you don't know if it's kayfabe or shoot. I can't be the only one that was like, Is this real? Is this a real fight that these two are having? It was so great. And so now you have that rivalry set up. You gave Seth the opportunity to go away with Becky for a little while and go be parents and go rest and recuperate. And Lord knows the guy needs it. Like, it was win, 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 win for everybody because you get a Punk McIntyre rivalry. McIntyre, to me, I want straight up, entirely, top to bottom, unhinged Scottish psychopath. Not the one that's like coming out and trolling with the funny t-shirts and all that. I want the dude. You know what I want? I want from him what I used to want from Roman Reigns. Come out, kick ass, tear the ring in half, and then leave and do it again and again and again until you get your belt back. That's what I want from McIntyre. That's the best character he can be. And now that is set up. And like I said, Judgment Day gets a belt, which can lead to either them solidifying more, or to them breaking up because Damian and Rhea have belts and nobody else does. And that, you know, Rhea can start holding them accountable, Finn and Dominic and all these for not having belts, while R-Truth also hangs around hilariously in the background. Like, it's literally a win-win-win story for everybody involved.
Yeah, Shayna Smith back in the chat also likes the role that CM Punk is playing. He's the thorn in Drew's side. And it's just, like you said, it's sort of, I love the thought process that we're going to get back to him being a psychopath, which was what he was great at when he came back to WWE. If you're just joining us, we're here with Rob Brown of the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate talking WrestleMania 40. And wherever you're watching, make sure you join the conversation as everyone has in the chat tonight. Yeah, listen, this match looked like it was going to be a squash. Like, my co-host on the show thought that was going to be a squash and it was going to be a la Sheamus and Daniel Bryan. And sure enough, it started off with a Claymore. And you thought, wow, this is going to be it. And no, we got some decent storytelling. And like you said, like, we didn't know if what Drew McIntyre was doing is really rubbing it in CM Punk's face. Like, hey, like, remember when you came back, this was supposed to be your moment. It's mine now. And I love the fact that he trolls CM Punk relentlessly. Like, he tweeted out in the middle of his match, like, just bored at work. I mean, it was, yep. it's phenomenal, man. It's so good.
Listen, that story was perfect. Punk's role in it is perfect. You get that back. By the way, it wasn't just the first tweet from McIntyre. It was the second tweet from McIntyre that genuinely had me laughing out loud. And out of respect for you and the fact that my mom may find this podcast one day, I won't read the tweet. Suffice to say, it violated every FCC regulation. Yes. But it was so perfect for that moment. And again, like, I will say this. I never thought squash match, because like him or not, dig him or not, this belt only felt like this was a credible match because of how Seth Rollins has carried it since he won it. So I think even with the injury and even with the match he had the night before, to have Seth go out there and lose Daniel Bryan to Sheamus style, I don't think you do that out of respect to what Seth Rollins did to elevate this belt. So to let him have a fighting chance, and by the way, when he comes back, point out that, hey, Drew, or whoever has the belt, but I'm assuming Drew, whether it's a feud for the belt or not, hey, Drew, you didn't beat me. Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Roman Reigns beat my ass, and you got what was left, and I still took you to the limit. Now, all of a sudden, that feud's right there when he comes back, too. So I think they booked it real, real well.
Yeah, it's more phenomenal points, man. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm glad that Seth is going to get the time off, because, you know, we almost didn't make Mania because of his knee injury. Now he actually gets to go and get surgery if he does need it. And then they can go, he and Becky can go play house mom and house dad and sort of enjoy some much needed time off for the both of them. So yeah, I'm loving this dynamic, and I'm really curious to see what they do with Priest as champion going forward. Next up on night two, we can skip right over this. The Pride defeats the Final Testament, Karrion Kross and Authors of Pain. I'm a huge AOP guy, but I'm not sure. Like, it's one of those things that, like, yeah, it's fun. They're getting them used and utilized over on SmackDown, but I don't know where they take them from here. Rob, you got any thoughts about what they're doing with Karrion Kross and the Final Testament over on SmackDown?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Karrion Kross can wrestle, and I will never complain when Scarlett is on my television. That is one thing I can tell you for certain. But I'm with you. Like, I don't get it. And I'm not saying that you have to, and I don't think you should ever. This is something Bray Wyatt was so good at. I think wrestling's boring when they come out and they just punch you in the face with, here's the story. Here's what we're doing, right? I think it's fine to tell a story where you get some details. This is one of the things I loved under Triple H, is when you're watching Raw and SmackDown, you can't sit there with your phone in your hand and just listen anymore, because there's details in the background, right? There's details in the background about things that are happening. I go back to the night that Rock beat Cody Rhodes' ass by his bus. Well, you remember Drew came out to help the Bloodline in that moment, but about 3 seconds before that, completely unrelated promo taking place in the back, and way off in the distance in the background are Paul Heyman and Drew McIntyre having a discussion with each other. And then Drew comes, like, they're telling stories that have all these details and not punch you in the face. I'm not saying I need to be punched in the face with a story, but, like, you gotta give me something. I'm glad Paul Ellering's back. I will every day of the week take Scarlett Bordeaux on my television, but, like, why? What? What are we doing? Yes. You're just being weird. Like, being weird is not a character trait. You gotta have a reason to be weird, and I don't know what theirs is.
I feel like they're Wish.com Judgment Day. I feel like that's what they are. They want to be this mysterious, like, dark group. But, like, they don't do anything mysterious or dark outside of just beating up people. Like, at least...
Yeah, like Scarlett... White, yeah. Like, Scarlett has some smoke sometimes, and that's it, right? Like, she's... Now, I will even give you this. When Karrion Kross and Scarlett showed up on the main roster and they were doing the thing with the hourglass and the tarot cards and all that, I was in for that. Like, okay, that's in it. Like, Scarlett's kind of like the witchy one behind the scenes pulling the strings, and... Karrion Kross is, and don't tell me you're not good with the super supernatural powers, because for God's sake, we just had 77,000 people cheer the crap out of The Undertaker for 13 seconds of action. That was cool. And then you brought him back, and it's like, I don't know if he's supposed to be scary supernatural power Karrion Kross, or like cool motorcycle guy Karrion Kross, or like I sleep with that lady, so I'm cool Karrion. Like, I don't know what the character's supposed to be, and because I don't know what he is, I don't know how Ellering and AOP fit with him, other than we really like black clothing, but like so does everybody. So that's not really a gimmick, my guy.
Yeah, I'm interested to see maybe that storyline kind of takes off after the draft and they get them more involved, because it felt like this rivalry was just thrown together so that you could put this match at WrestleMania. Like that's all there was to it. And again, the pride going over as to be sort of expected here. The next match on the card, if you talk about Jay and Jimmy stealing the show, this is another match that I thought could steal the show, as LA Knight, takes on AJ Styles.
I mean, right. Do it again and do it right.
LA Knight.
Here we go. Thank you.
LA Knight, you mentioned on your show, they sort of like, I think they pushed him to the top too quick. He took off, he got a shot at the title, and they had to sort of bring him back down so they could build him back up. And AJ Styles could wrestle with a mop and make the mop look good. And so I thought this is the perfect pairing of these two. They did some, we talk about storytelling, they did some great stuff where LA Knight showed up at AJ Styles' house, the cops were involved, like really good build to this. And we finally get LA Knight going over on AJ Styles. What are your thoughts on where LA Knight goes from here? I know we've got all new champions all over the place, but where do we see LA Knight go from here?
Let's start with two things. Number one, Montez deserves to be a legendary wrestler to back us up one. Now to bring us back forward another one, okay? Because that guy's incredible. And no disrespect to anybody else involved in that match, but that guy is a superstar in the making. Yeah. As far as this match goes, WWE's biggest mistake of the last year was having LA Knight chase Roman Reigns for the title. There was no reason for it, unless the story you were going to tell. And this is where I thought, and I know we'll talk more about this when we get to the main event here in just a little while. If the story you were going to tell for that Avengers Assemble moment that I thought we were going to get and kind of got, but didn't really get, but got enough of, but like not enough of. I thought the story, or the Avengers Assemble moment was going to be that everybody that Roman screwed over the years, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, LA Knight, all these other folks, they were going to be the ones that came out and got involved to put the bloodline in the hole. Then it would have made sense to have LA Knight go after Roman Reigns and get his ass kicked, and then later he features in the WrestleMania main event. But to have him go out, get smoked by Roman, even if it was because of interference, and then basically not do anything but become a Slim Jim spokesman for the next 2.5-3 months. I didn't really get it when LA Knight was arguably, not definitively, but arguably the most organically over with the crowd wrestler dating back to Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 30. Okay? LA Knight is one of very few wrestlers on the planet that can stand on a ring post and just point in the air, and 70,000 people will say a word back at him, right? There's not many other guys that can do that. Stone Cold can get people to say what, but he's got to give them the cadence. And LA Knight's just got to point three times, and everybody pops, right? Like, that's how over that guy was. So I didn't understand that. I thought it cooled him off, probably unjustifiably, but I'm also a big fan. Lonzo can't stand him. I don't get it. I don't understand. I think he's phenomenal.
That's probably the Ohio AJ State Styles. Lonzo. It's probably the Ohio State attitude. That's it. Yeah. That's
poor guy. Nobody's perfect. I thought to have him against AJ Styles was a good pairing, because you're right. AJ Styles could put me in the ring and make me look like a superstar, and I'm just a fat old out of shape guy, and he could wrestle me and make me look clean. I thought it was a good pairing. I thought it was you did enough with all the background story building that what was kind of an almost thrown together feud. When you got the two of them getting into what was sold as a shoot fight at the fan access event, where AJ Styles dropped a, I will bleep you up, and LA Knight dropped a, are you going to be at SmackDown, you fill in the blank with lady genitalia term here. That was the first time in this feud that I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Now I was in. And then I was sold, and they put on an LA Knight AJ Styles match. It was exactly the story I thought it was going to be. It was exactly the result I thought it was going to be. But It builds LA Knight back up. It gives AJ Styles the opportunity to do something new with his character, which I think is needed. Love AJ, but needed maybe a little twist up. I think it was exactly what it needed to be. Wasn't anything I'm going to be talking about for years to come, but it was good enough to talk about for a couple of minutes right here.
There you go. Shannon coming back in and saying that he thought the story was told really well. Huge LA Knight fan. Pedro brings up a good question. Do you think that it would have been any different if LA Knight had won the Money in the Bank contract over Damian Priest? His mind always wonders how things would have gone. Knowing what we know now and seeing what we've seen now, do you think, all things being equal, that they made the right decision by not giving LA Knight the Money in the Bank contract?
I get the sneaky suspicion that that was a VKM thing. That was a decision made by the old guy who used to be in charge, because if there's one thing for Mr. Grab the Brass Ring that he hates when wrestlers do, it's when they grab the brass ring. They do not like, or at least that guy didn't like it. I think Paul Triple H Levesque does like and appreciate that. So I'm still not shocked that that was the decision that they decided to go in with that. I think the problem you bumped into was, if you gave it to LA Knight, the fan base becomes supernova white hot every time that music hits. And yep, you can't tell a real story, but we all knew the belt wasn't changing hands until WrestleMania. They were committed to a 3-year story. That belt was not changing hands until WrestleMania. So you have LA Knight walking around with a briefcase where every time his face or his music hits, the stadium loses its mind, and you cannot have him cash it in. Or you give it to Damian, who is always a wild card but doesn't have a real vendetta with Roman or Seth or anybody with the belt. So he remains kind of that offstage player that you never know when he's going to come out. If you gave it to LA Knight, you would have him, I think, be too much of a distraction with the briefcase to do it. What's the point of his fight with AJ Styles if he's got a briefcase waiting for Roman to get his ass kicked, if that makes sense?
No, that's completely fair. And I think you said it absolutely perfectly. Curious to see what happens next for LA Knight. I mean, we've got some pay-per-views or some premium live events, I should say, coming up, including Money in the Bank later this summer. So maybe that's when he finally gets his. Next up on night two, we've got the United States Championship as Logan Paul, as painful as that is for me to say, your United States Champion takes on Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. And the match starts off with Kevin Owens in a golf cart, almost killing Randy Orton on the way. You can see Randy Orton hops on the back of the golf cart and Kevin Owens drives them both down. And you see Randy telling him to like calm down, like slow down, like I'm not trying to die here. And you get a lot of gaga here, as to be expected. The Prime Bottle, the first on apron advertiser that you had in WWE history. You had the Prime logo on the turnbuckles and everything else. They are really getting behind Logan Paul and his influencer status. And he goes over here as United States Champion. Rob, I don't like Logan Paul as a person. I understand why he went over, but I was hoping that we were going to get Kevin Owens winning the United States title, and a la like we had last year, where Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn got to hoist the tag titles together. I was hoping that we were going to get to see like a friendship moment where they both were able to do it on their own with individual championships. Who is the person to eventually take the title off of Logan Paul, who is the worst United States champion since David Flair?
Okay, so I got a lot to respond to here, and I will do my best to keep it quick so that I don't overrun us any more than this. May shock you, Rob Brown goes long. All right, it just is what it is. Get used to it.
Same.
So let's go with a couple of things. Number one, I also dislike Logan Paul as a person, but what I cannot do is disparage him as a professional wrestler, because as much as I dislike him as a dude, he is a hell of a wrestler. Let's call it what it is here, big fella. Logan Paul is better than about 90% of the NXT roster. He just is. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like it, but he's better than most of NXT. I mean that, okay? Well, I mentioned earlier, wrestling's at its best when you don't know what's shoot and what's kayfabe. The Prime logo on the ring, it disgusts me. It makes me sick. Not even because it's Prime. Any logo, I don't like it, because the as much as he's a heel, I love Gunther's The Ring is Sacred. It is. That doesn't mean you can't goof off and have fun in wrestling, but it's a wrestling ring. It is where many of us were born and raised. It is where many of us got our chance. My relationship with my dad and grandpa was built around watching Ric Flair and Jake the Snake Roberts in a wrestling ring. It matters, even if it's just entertainment. So I hated a logo. Didn't even matter if it was Prime. You could have stuck the logo of something that I love down there, and I still would have disliked it. You could have stuck the logo for Jameson Whiskey in that ring, and I would have wanted it up, despite the fact that if Rob Brown's going on a bender one weekend, you should buy stock in Jameson. That's how much I love it, all right? So, I dislike that. Now, there's a few things going on as well. We, as grown-ass men, sometimes do have to remember that while we love our wrestling, it is catered for the next generation, and it always will be. It doesn't mean they can't treat us to some nice little moments like The Undertaker and John Cena being involved, but the reality is their job is to cater to the next generation. Logan Paul's got however many, what is it, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 million people who watch him on YouTube. That's a gigantic-ass audience. Yes, they're going to take full advantage of that. I love that Randy Orton is having fun. Wrestlers and wrestling figures that are having fun are my favorite. Michael Cole's reemergence since the introduction of Pat McAfee is chef's kiss. Michael Cole's the best he's ever been with McAfee. Randy Orton has been having fun getting back in the ring and wrestling, and you can see it. And Kevin Owens is just a fat wrestling fan who happened to figure out how to wrestle and get the ticket punched. I love KO, because if KO can do it, so can I. Damn it, I can't. I am way past too old now, but I could have done it years ago if Kevin Owens can do it. I don't know if you saw it a while back. There was a dark match with Kevin Owens, Cody Rhodes, and Randy Orton, where the faces won, and Randy picked up Cody Rhodes on his shoulder. And KO walked over to him and gave him the thumbs up and then turned his wrist. And you could see Cody's face light up. And then Kevin's like, no, I'm playing. And he has, this is off camera. This is, dark matches are the best thing in the world because the wrestlers just get to have fun, right?
Yes.
Kevin turns to the camera and you can see him laughing his ass off because he knows what he just did and how everybody was like, oh, and we all, because he's a wrestling fan, for God's sake. And they, this is true, tell the best stories as wrestlers. I thought the way that they transitioned from buddy cops arc, Randy Orton and KO, to two guys who made the realization that, yeah, we came in here to kick Logan's ass together, but one of us has to win. I thought they told that story really well. As far as I'm concerned, this match was better than it had any right to be. I loved every second of this match. Of all the matches that nobody is calling one of the best parts of the weekend, this was one of the best parts of the weekend to me.
No, I don't disagree with you at all. I think, like you said, Randy Orton was not always the guy who was just having fun. I think Riddle, of all people, Matt Riddle, sort of opened up Randy Orton to be able to have fun on screen again. And then Kevin Owens, like, even when he was a bad guy, he was fun to watch. Like, even as the angriest heel, there was something about him that always had you, like, crack a smile. And so I'm a huge fan. You talk about big guys with beards, you're speaking my language. Always trust a fat guy when he's recommending food to try. And if Kevin Owens ever tells me something that I need to go eat, I'm listening to him. Huge fan of Kevin Owens. I'm curious to know who's going to be the guy to take it off of Logan Paul. I'm personally hoping it's LA Knight. You talk about the mega star at LA Knight against the mega social media star and Logan Paul. I think it's a match made in heaven. And I think it's the right way to get a title onto LA Knight and get the title off of Logan Paul. So I'll be interested to see where they go from here, considering especially, you know, again, we've got the draft coming in a few weeks. So we don't know if Logan Paul winds up on Raw or stays over on SmackDown. So it'll be fun to watch there. The penultimate match on night two of WrestleMania saw the WWE Women's Championship get put up for grabs as Io Sky defended against her former leader of Damage Control, Bayley. The biggest thing that I'll say about this match is I'm surprised we didn't get more interference from Damage Control. Like, I know that they lost the six woman tag the night before, but I felt like this is a relatively, I mean, from what I can remember, this was a clean victory for Bayley. Like, what is the point of having a faction and being a heel faction if you're not going to try to keep the title off of your champion? Rob Brown, what say you about this Bayley finally getting her WrestleMania moment? And now have she's done everything in WWE now as she wins the women's championship here on WrestleMania.
There is ordinarily and traditionally a way around this, which is you have the wrestler pull the old, I want to do this on my own. I want to prove to me or to the crowd or to her or to him or whoever, or to my mom, to the fans, that I'm good enough to do this by myself, right? I don't recall having gotten that from Damage Control. So I agree with you. Why would they spend 3 weeks beating the crap out of Bayley week in and week out only to then not do that when the belt's actually on the line? You were doing everything you could to prevent her from making it to WrestleMania, but then she makes it to WrestleMania and you let it, like you just let it happen. Like I agree with you. I didn't get that. But the premise of letting it play out the way it did make sense, because to me, Bayley's one of the girls that, as far as I'm concerned, absolutely deserves her moment. She deserved a WrestleMania win. She deserved a WrestleMania championship win. She deserved this moment with going over Damage Control finally. And on top of that, Io Sky once again proved why she is one of the best female wrestlers on planet Earth right now. She was incredible in this. I really like this match. Like I said, I'm a proponent and an ally for female wrestlers. I thought this match showed how good, how compelling, how entertaining it can be. I thought it was good. I thought it was well told. I thought it was well put together. The only thing I didn't like it was I didn't understand why they had Bayley come out on the shoulders of the four dudes. Like, first off, why is Bayley Egyptian? All right, I didn't really understand all that. If you wanted to present her as like an Egyptian goddess, I get that. But like, why is she just on? I made a tweet. I made the joke about how clearly the conversation backstage was, sorry, baby, we spent all the money on the prime mat, so we don't have enough for a chariot. We're just going to have the boys carry you. Hop up. Like, that's kind of how that whole thing felt. But once it, by the way, Io Sky's entrance and the Tron is dope as hell, all right? Like, just, it's like a nightclub rave. It was dope as hell. But I thought
she walks through the ring like she's drunk too. She walks like she's absolutely, you know, just absolutely trashed. Yeah, I'm with you.
I love everything about it. I enjoy this match. I thought this match was good. Again, I don't think it's necessarily a championship match that we are going to be talking about for years and years down the road, but I think it was a good WrestleMania championship match. Here's the only thing I care about. Come back, side pony Bayley. Come back, yes. Hug Life Bayley. I miss you.
Bring the wacky, wavy, inflatable arm flailing tube. Yep. Bring them back. I'm right there with you.
Back, side pony Bayley. I'm begging you, Bayley. Do it.
The two things I'll mention. One is that Bayley had some of the best entrance music in all of wrestling, and they gave her new music on this night, so that was sort of disappointing. Secondly, I will say that, like, after last year's WrestleMania, it was sort of hinted that they were going to break up Damage Control. Like, there was social media posts about Bayley, like, this is the greatest story. Like, I don't want it to go away. And they somehow stretched it out for an entire year for her to get to this WrestleMania. And that's honestly what I thoroughly enjoyed more than anything, is that a year ago, she thought that it was all going to become crashing down. And instead, they stretched it out and got what they got here. And that to me, you talk about a payoff. That's a payoff if you've ever seen one. Rob, we have reached it. We are at the main event of night two, the biggest main event of all time, as Roman Reigns puts his 1,316-day title streak on the line. Good for fourth all time against the man who's been trying to finish his story for 3 years, the son of the son of a plumber, the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes. And boy, my wrestling show co-host would say this, boy howdy, did we get a lot of stuff in this match? You mentioned we got involvement from Jimmy and Jey Uso. We saw Solo Sikoa, the likes of John Cena. Then obviously you're going to get the quote unquote people's champion. I say quote unquote because he's got the title to prove it now. And The Rock, which everybody expected him to come out. I'll tell you the one thing a spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, Cody does go over, as everyone expects him to do. But the one thing that I was most disappointed about in this match, and I don't know why we didn't get him, but when The Rock came out and was getting ready to lay up the smack it down with his Mama Rhodes weight belt, we didn't hear glass shatter. We heard a gong. And The Undertaker made an appearance in a hooded sweatshirt and black, looked like black surgical gloves, if you will, to thwart the attempted attack by The Rock that would eventually lead to. And we also got Seth Rollins, Shield Seth Rollins, which was fun. Because you talk about storytelling. I saw something online where it's something like Roman never was able to get over that betrayal because he had the opportunity to hit Cody with the chair or hit Seth with the chair. And he hit Seth in full-on Shield gear with the chair that would eventually lead to his demise. The last 10 minutes of this match was absolute chaos, and that's what I think all of us were expecting. I was genuinely disappointed that we didn't get Stone Cold here to face off with The Rock one more again at WrestleMania. Rob, how'd you feel about everything that had to go into this main event? I know it was a lot to talk about.
Let me say to you something that I've been saying to wrestling fans my whole life. I say it on the show. I'll say it to you on this pod and everybody else. The number one rule of wrestling fandom to me is do not fantasy yourself into disappointment because it can be fun. Listen, I'm a creative-minded person. Not because I choose to be, but just because I'm too dumb for math and money-making talent, so I have to make things up in my head. I love some fantasy booking. Lonzo and I do it almost weekly on the radio program on Fight Club, which happens every Thursday morning at 9:20, where we talk wrestling, boxing, professional wrestling, MMA, and professional wrestling. In case I haven't self-promoted myself enough yet, I'll do it again. Fantasy booking yourself into disappointment is the dumbest thing you can do. I say that respectfully and lovingly. The dumbest thing you can do as a wrestling fan, because here's the reality. If you finish that main event and the first thought you had was, "Oh, no Stone Cold," that sucks for you, dude, because it was so much fun. It was so chaotic. All right, you had all these different names and faces and music drops and spots, and the Usos, I think, are dead after jumping off the stage. And I mean, there was just so much going on that if you decided before the event that it was Stone Cold or you were going to be disappointed.
Oh, yeah.
That sucks. That sucks for you. I'm sorry for you because I was on that couch right there losing my godforsaken mind every time something else happened because I did not have it in my head that Stone Cold was coming out. In fact, I knew that nobody was. I knew the Usos were coming. I know Solo was coming. And outside of that, I'm like, who? And I knew Seth was coming. I'm like, outside of that, who's going to help IDK? My BFF Jill? Like, we'll find out. I don't know. And I'm all in for that. And I think because of that fact, it made it great. So if you went into that fantasy book that Stone Cold was going to be the guy that came out and put down The Rock, sorry, dog, that's on you a little bit. The match was amazing. It was a blast. I will say this. The Seth Rollins spot is still underappreciated. What did Seth say to Cody to trigger that team, that team mentality? I will be your shield. He was. Literally, he was the shield. He came out in the war vest. That I never understood why the Shield wore bulletproof vests in the first place, but hey, maybe wrestling got a little hard out on these streets. He came out as the Shield, and I have made the argument that, in my own head, in my own fantasy booking, Seth knew exactly what he was doing. He knew he had to eat a bullet for Cody Rhodes. He knew he had to. Seth could have jumped in and clobbered Dwayne in the back of the dome with a chair. But he knew that that was not going to be what was needed in that moment. What was needed in that moment was to grab the attention of Roman Reigns. You need the apex predator locked on you so that somebody else could get around behind him and go for the kill. Seth knew, hit in my head, because that's how stories work. Seth knew that popping Dwayne in the back of his big ass head wasn't going to help Cody. What's he do? He takes The Rock out, but then what do you have? A still perfectly healthy Roman Reigns over in the corner to beat Cody Rhodes. He needed to take the bullet. He needed to take the shot. So far as to say, here's the thing. when Roman walked over and hit Seth with the chair, what was Seth doing? Standing facing the crowd. Why the hell is he facing the crowd? The answer was because if he was facing Roman Reigns, Roman isn't going to do anything. Roman's going to go, you're irrelevant to me. You don't matter. I got enough guys out here that can remove you. I'm staying dotted on Cody. But by turning his back while wearing Shield gear, while Roman's got a chair available, he knew he was going to click Roman back to the night that Seth Rollins turned on Roman Reigns and broke up the Shield. And Roman immediately decided that that was the shot he needed. And it opened the door for Cody Rhodes. Long term booking, baby. I will be your Shield. He was literally the Shield. And like a Shield does, it took the bullet so that Cody could live. I thought, forget Undertaker and Cena and Solo and Jimmy and Jay and everybody else. That it could have just been that moment.
Yes.
And it still would have been an incredible moment in wrestling history.
It's how can you not be romantic about professional wrestling? Like, how can you not genuinely enjoy? Like, I hate the thought process that these non-wrestling fans have about how do you enjoy that? It's all scripted and fake and yada yada yada. No, if you can enjoy a good Marvel movie, if you enjoy, like you talked about James Bond earlier, if you like a good thriller, a good action movie, even a good comedy, there's scripting to it and there's storytelling behind all of these stories. And Shannon Smith agrees that it was brilliant. I mean, this is the kind of storytelling that you look for in professional wrestling. Like, professional wrestling fans don't look at professional wrestling like a sport, at least not the ones that are old enough to know the difference. And like I helped Banker Bill to understand that when you can remove yourself from viewing it as a sport and viewing it for the entertainment that it is. And I know they would call it a sport because there's a lot of athleticism involved. And matter of fact, Banker Bill in the chat saying he even stayed after the after press conference. So it's one of those things, like, you appreciate what they're doing, not just what there's the storytelling on the mic, the storytelling in the ring, and the poetic nature of that, of what you mentioned with Seth Rollins turning his back on Roman Reigns is just, I mean, how could you do it any better, man? How could you do it?
This is something that I don't think non-wrestling fans understand. When I get asked to this day, why do you, as a nearly 40-year-old man, watch wrestling? The same reason that you watch anything else, because it makes you feel something. We are human beings. There is no desire on planet Earth that any of us have more than the want to feel something. We just do. We want to feel. We want to feel love. We want to feel fear. We want to feel adrenaline. We want to feel melancholy. We want to experience the spectrum of feels. And wrestling, when it is at its best, touches every one of them. It scares you with The Undertaker. It excites you with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And it sometimes it gives you this moment of full circle love, my man. And Seth laying down in that moment, by understanding that he outwitted Roman Reigns and Roman falling for it. It was smart, it was tactical, but it was also a guy who took a chair shot from a man that I, in storyline, got to imagine, even if he turned on Roman, there's always going to be that little bit of love in his heart, because without the Shield, there's no Seth Rollins. It was all of that. Every now and then, I think all of us maybe take like a brief break from wrestling. All right, I'm doing that right now. I hate to say it, and I'm sorry to say it because I love Samoa Joe, but I'm kind of breaking from AEW right now. Like, I'll circle back around and dive back in a couple of weeks when they start pushing towards Forbidden Door and all that. But I've taken a little bit of a break, and it's not even like I sat around one day and went, oh, I think I'll take a break from AEW. It's just been, I got enough going on, and unfortunately, that's the product right now that I feel has to go back shelf to make more time. WrestleMania Sunday, specifically the final 10 minutes of that main event, was a love letter. It was a love letter to what this entertainment industry is. It was a love letter to all of us as fans to remind us of why we are wrestling fans. It was a love letter from this industry that, if we are all subjective and honest, or I should say objective and honest with each other, guys, it's kind of silly to be a wrestling fan. It is. It's kind of silly to watch men and women in their underpants fake beat each other up for as many as, I don't know about you, but for me, 10, 12 hours of my life a week. But there's a reason that we do it. And the end of that WrestleMania main event on Sunday was a not so gentle reminder that when it's at its best, wrestling makes you feel everything. Tell me there wasn't a moment where you thought, oh, damn, they might let Roman win. Tell me there wasn't a moment when The Rock's music hit that you didn't come out of that seat, even though you knew he was going to be there. You still were like, oh, here comes the most electrifying man in sports talk entertainment. Tell me when Cena's music hit, you didn't pop at home, even if you were by yourself. Tell me when the Uso brothers were battling up the ramp and throwing themselves off a 12-foot ledge that you didn't go, oh, God! Tell me you didn't have, during the last 12 minutes of that match, every human emotion, from fear to excitement to energetic to love to hate to just the entire spectrum of human emotion. And if you tell me that you didn't have all those emotions, I'm going to suggest you talk to a therapist because something's wrong with you, big dog.
That's a phenomenal way to put it. Listen, it's WrestleMania 40 is one for the books. And I think it's arguably the best WrestleMania that we've ever seen, at least the best WrestleMania we've seen in quite some time. Rob, on this show, we have a segment that we call the curtain call, where we give our final thoughts on the show and everything in it. So my first question for our curtain call is, what's the next step for Roman Reigns? He's no longer the fourth longest reigning champion in WWE history. What's next here for the Tribal Chief?
I think it plays out like this. Remember earlier when I said don't fantasy book yourself into disappointment? Here's my fantasy booking for Roman Reigns. You're welcome in advance. Here's how it plays out. Roman's going to go away for a little while. Why wouldn't he? He just got lost. Obviously, he's not going to take that well. He's going to disappear. We also know that Dwayne has to disappear for a little while. And during maybe the most awkward segment of wrestling I've seen in a long time with him and Cody in the ring last night, Dwayne pointed out that The Rock's got to go away for a little while, but it doesn't mean he's not coming back, and he doesn't mean I'm not coming back for you, Cody Rhodes. Okay, we know Dwayne's got movies filming. We know it's going to be a handful of months before he can come back. It gives Roman time to take some time off. So Roman goes away. Roman does whatever Roman's got to do. Roman shows back up one day, and he does so trying to claim the title of the Tribal Chief. But do you smell what The Rock is cooking, who comes out as the people's champ and says to Roman, oh, no, you were the Tribal Chief. Now the Tribal Chief is the people's champion, and we get our Rock v. Roman rundown. Now, everybody's been predicting that this is SummerSlam. I don't think it is. That's too soon. Dwayne's got movies to film. This is likely going to kick off my suggestion or my thought, my belief, a program well after SummerSlam. I would guess probably sometime around Thanksgiving, Christmas of next year. I don't think it's going to be as long of a program as we like, but we're going to end up, I think, with a tribal civil war of sorts, right? Like, you're going to have, and by the way, Jacob Fatu and I think more of that family are going to be in the mix by then. You'll end up with Jimmy and Jay and Solo and Jacob all having to kind of find out where they fit in into this hierarchy. But whether or not the rest of the tribe buys into this, I think you're going to have Rock come back and disparage Roman for losing on the biggest stage, take the Tribal Chief moniker. And my only question is, does this turn Roman face or does it turn Rock face? And more importantly, has Roman learned? Because remember when VKM was pushing Roman as John Cena Volume 2.0, even as a Roman Reigns guy, right? He was boring as a face. I'm sorry. Yes. He was. His promos sucked. His matches weren't that good. He didn't become Roman Reigns until he became the Tribal Chief and went full heel on us. And at that moment, I was like, ah, he's good. He's real, real good. This guy's going to be good. If they bring him back as a face, has he learned enough through his time with Paul and his time squaring off against a bunch of faces that the people loved to flip to the other side and try it? Because if not, I don't know what you do with Roman Reigns after this.
Yeah, I've got this weird feeling that we're going to get Rock and Cody for the title. To your point, I think we're going to get it somewhere around Survivor Series where the Rock comes back for Cody. And we see this struggle between him and Roman for that moniker as tribal chief. You're going to see potentially a match between Cody and Rock at the Royal Rumble, which Roman Reigns could potentially interfere in and cost the Rock that match that leads them into WrestleMania next year, which could potentially be the Rock's final match ever. I mean, it's you look at him and you can't tell unless you really look at him in the face. I mean, the Rock's in his 50s at this point. Like, the Rock is not getting any younger. And despite being bigger and more in shape and more fit than I will ever be, Father Time is undefeated. So I'm really curious to see what happens from here. The only other question I'm going to pose is, we saw last night on Monday Night Raw, Fatal 4-Way as for the number one contendership for the world title. I don't know if it's for the world title or for the WWE championship, but Jey Uso won a Fatal 4-Way last night to win a shot, I believe, at Damian Priest. Who will be your first real challenger for Cody Rhodes? I mean, there's plenty of people that we sort of kind of pushed aside because Roman was running through everybody and nobody was left. Who do you see being the person to get the first real program to challenge Cody for his championship?
I think one thing you're likely going to see, one of the things that I think you have to do, I think, is you've got to let Cody have a bit of a ring. I'll tell you what I'm most nervous about. I'm real nervous Cody Rhodes is going to be a boring champion. Sincerely. Like, Cody Rhodes plays a fantastic underdog babyface. He plays that. You had the whole thing about him trying to make Duff and roll with the American dream, baby, make him proud and do it for his mama and all that. And all that was great. And I was all in it. As somebody who lost my dad as a young age, like, I get it, dude. Everything I do, I absolutely am trying to do to make my dad proud. For sure. I get it. I emotionally connected with that story, but he's done that now. So what's next? Like, what's the why? And you know, they did the thing last night where they showed his daughter up on the screen. They'll say, that's my why. And this is where Rob Brown does his own heel turn. I don't care about that, Cody Rhodes. And maybe this is because I don't have a kid, don't want a kid. I don't care. Like, you're not gonna come out and go, I got a championship night to match tonight, and I'm gonna do it for my. I don't care. There's nothing to me to connect to that. I don't know it. I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm saying I don't know how it's done. I don't know how you think that you are going to tell a compelling story with champion Cody Rhodes. I'll tell you what you have to do. You have to let it last for a few months, because if you gave him the bump over Roman Reigns and then he turns around and he loses it in 2-3 months, he defends it 6-7 times and loses it, it makes Roman look worse, right? Yes. Like, okay, well then why couldn't Roman, you know what I mean? Like, and granted, that is kind of the point. But I am very interested in seeing how you now that Cody has lost what made him compelling, how do you make him compelling? Because I got to tell you, I'm real good at this stuff. I'm a real good writer. Hey, Paul Levesque, I'm available. All right. I'll move to Stanford tomorrow. Call me. I'll give you my number in the DMs, bro. I'm real good at this. I don't know how to make Cody Rhodes compelling anymore. I don't know. And he's not the org, like last night, like, all right, sorry, and I know we're stretching and we're way long already, and I apologize for that, but
it's all right, man, you're good.
When he was cutting his first promo last night, I was bored, dog. I'm sorry to say it, I really was. I was bored. It didn't get good until The Rock came out, and even when The Rock came out, once The Rock started talking and The Rock started referring to The Rock in third person, even it got boring with The Rock involved. Do you know how difficult it is to make anything boring with The Rock involved? It's impossible to make something boring with The Rock involved, yet it was. And I get it. It was night number one. They probably hadn't really worked into the direction that they were going here. So I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know who you bring up. I'll tell you who I'd like to see make a run at a championship one day, because I'm a huge fan, and I'm not dropping this because it needs to happen now, but because I want it to happen eventually. Bron Damn Breaker, who is a freaking freak, and I love this guy. I don't know. I don't know how you make Cody Rhodes interesting. And that is what I am geared up to watch play out for the next few weeks. Because I'll tell you right now, I got nothing. And if you just had him go over Roman, you better figure something out now.
That segment went over 38 minutes from start of the show to finish without a commercial, without a match. And like you said, it dragged on. I'll tell you who I would like to see in the first program with Cody Rhodes, and it's Gunther. Not because I want Gunther to all of a sudden win the title, and not that I want to see Gunther all of a sudden look weak after losing the Intercontinental title and then losing to Cody, but the storyline is there. They faced off. They were the last two in the Royal Rumble 2023. He was one of the final four in the Royal Rumble in 2024. So they've sort of been kind of navigating around each other. And so if there's one person that's strong enough that's going to be like the villain, so to speak, for Cody Rhodes, I'm not saying in Germany, but like you talked about somewhere down the line, I would like to see a long-term program with Cody Rhodes taking on Gunther and Imperium, primarily because I think Gunther deserves the push. Whether or not he ever wins the title from Cody is irrelevant. But you talked about making it interesting. Now that Cody's the hunted, not the hunter, now you've got to have him do like the Super Cena or the Super Seth, where you're going to put everybody against him and he's going to have to find a way to overcome. So really interesting to see how they do that with Cody.
I want to agree with you, but here's the problem. With the exception of the Bloodline, Cody's been buddy-buddy with everybody, right? Yes. Like, you mentioned Judgment Day, like, but Damian's got the belt, so are you sending out Finn Balor? What's the point of Finn Balor right now? I don't think you can feed Gunther to Cody Rhodes right now. I think Gunther's done and is doing too much. You had to have Sami Zayn reenact the movie Rocky in Philadelphia to get over Gunther, all right? Like, that's a big damn deal for Sami Zayn and for Gunther to eat that L. I don't know how you follow it up, but I'll tell you what I'm not doing. I'm not having Gunther just turn around and eat a championship L his next time out. Like, I don't think that's the right. For the record, again, friend of the show, friend of Walter, friend of Gunther, I absolutely want Gunther to have a championship belt on him. I do. I think he's got a chance to be that menacing foreign heel that we haven't seen in a very... They've tried to do some menacing heels, and they always came out as, like, slightly to moderately to very racist, and it was always really uncomfortable. Gunther, you can do that evil, scary foreign heel without it being a racist trope. He is genuinely an ass-kicking man from Austria who kicks the asses of all men not from Austria. And I think you can tell that story, but if you have him go out there and drop one to Cody, what do you do next with Gunther? What do you do? And for the record, I'm interested. I'm already asking the question, okay, what now? Does he chase down Damian Priest? Does he chase down Cody? You just put the straps on those guys. Are you going to have Gunther remove it at Backlash? I don't know.
Yeah.
Because you can't run a rematch back for Cody's belt, and you can't run a rematch back for Damian's belt unless you're going to let Drew do that, which is fine. But then what's, like, again, what are we doing with Gunther? I don't know. So I don't know, bro. I don't know what the direction is. But what did I say earlier? Wrestling's at its best when you don't know what's going to happen. Here we are, boys.
There you go. This has been one of my favorite shows, if not my favorite show about wrestling that I've ever done. Guys, if you don't know who Rob Brown is...
I get my own name tag. Look at that. I'm special.
You better call somebody. The Rob Brown Show. Again, he is a two-time South Carolina Broadcasters Association best sports show of the year. Find him live weekdays, 6 to 10 a.m. on the Fan Upstate, 97.1 FM Greenville, 97.7 FM Spartanburg. On X, you can find him at The Rob Brown Show, facebook.com, The Rob Brown Show, and on Twitch, search The Rob Brown Show. I found him over there too. Rob, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being here. This has been, I know we went super long, and I don't care. This has been beyond fun, and I will be forever grateful for you to be in here, man.
All right. Well, before I go, I do have one thing more to say. You just used the catchphrase of my tag team partners is, I don't know if you know this or not, I am a member officially and certifiably of Degeneration X and the New Age Outlaws. I once wrestled a tag team match with them, and you just dropped the, oh, you didn't know, and you hit me with, you better call somebody. No, 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 no. I need you to lean into that on my way out the door, or I'm never coming back. Do all it. Right.
Yo ass better call somebody. Is that better?
You see how much more fun that is? You see how That's much great. More fun that is? Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. I appreciate everybody that listens to the show and lets me continue to do this dumbass job as a job. It's the best thing in the world, and I appreciate it. And Bully Rye, thanks for having me on, my man. I appreciate it. This was tremendous. I'll come back and do it again.
That sounds phenomenal, guys. That's the end of the show. Remember, if you are not already doing so, follow, go like and follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/tapoutsandtouchdowns, on X at tapouts and TDs, and YouTube search for at tapouts and touchdowns. Guys, we've got a brand new football show coming up tomorrow with Banker Bill. We're going to go through UFL week 2 and so much more. Thank you once again for Rob Brown for being on the show. And we'll see you next time. For Rob Brown, it's your guy, Billy Rye. We'll see you next time right here on Tap Outs and Touchdowns.
Yeah!